the Pilot Training Reform Symposium impresses at least one skeptic. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, CFI, publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, and attendee within the last few days at the Pilot Training Reform Symposium in Atlanta that was chaired by the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators. And it happens to be Monday, the first chance we're getting to talk about it, so we'll hear from Bob first. And we're not going to hear perhaps the negative report that a lot of Bob's readers and our listeners might have expected, because Bob, if I read you correctly, it turned out to be more valuable than you had expected.
You are correct, and I my plan was not to do anything with it. I just disregarded the planned symposium as being nothing other, perhaps, than any dozen of big gatherings, expos, conferences, conventions that our industry puts on year after year after year, where we all get together, wave the flag, clap each other on the back, and praise how great we're doing. And I just felt that this symposium was likely to be no different. And I had expressed really no interest in going, and made that clear to my friend and colleague Doug Stewart, who said, "No, Bob, this is going to be a whole lot different. This is really going to be a working symposium where the attendees are not going to just sit around and listen and watch and then party at night." And the jury was still out in my mind until I made this an issue in a recent issue of Over the Airwaves, and actually had formulated a gentleman's wager with Doug that I didn't really think that this symposium offered anything new. And a long story made short, Doug persuaded me to attend. I went kicking and screaming. And then after the first full day of conference proceedings, like you said, Paul, my mind was changed. And Doug and his team and colleagues really were onto something. And the conference turned out to be really quite effective.
Okay, now, when you say it turned out to be really quite effective, quantify that for us. Tell us why you think so.
Well, first, as Doug had promised, it was a working session. I mean, we started at 8 o'clock in the morning. Doug ran the meeting like a Swiss watch. It was on time, every session, every speaker. The agenda rolled out in a highly effective fashion, where we heard presentations from key industry leaders, manufacturers, different stakeholders within the aviation industry, general aviation industry. And then the long and short of it, we broke out into five different study groups, and the 200 people in attendance or so were divided among those five study groups for several hours of intensive discussion in each of five specific areas. And then each of the study groups came back and, after considerable debate, reported what they considered to be five important changes or improvements or recommendations, if you will, for moving forward in the coming years. And that process was, believe me, a very, very diligent working session. And then, you know, they slipped food and drink into us long enough to keep us nourished and hydrated, and went back and beat on them again, and then presented the findings to the entire group, which included, Paul, more than just flight instructors and agency stakeholders. We had key leaders from the FAA, everybody from Randy Babbitt, the administrator, down to his key staff people in the general aviation and commercial division. So it really was speaking to the people that needed to be heard and spoken by the people who had the ideas. So in the end, it was a good use of time.
Okay, now Doug said from the get-go that this would not be focused on regulatory reform, but on reforming the culture and the curricula and, you know, other various handles that we can pull with less than a 10-year wait time. In that light, how successful do you think the outcomes can be?
You raise a very sensitive issue, Paul, on that. You know, the hope and the conference agenda, the hope was set that we could affect change not through regulatory action, but by changing the aviation culture, changing and working with such things as aviation circulars and the practical test standards and the various handbooks, which are non-regulatory in their production. We can do that without affecting a notice of proposed rulemaking and going through the long, laborious regulatory setting process. That was the hope. About 95% of the recommendations that came through or came out of the symposium really complied with that hope. There were still certain areas where the group felt clearly that a regulatory change would have to come in areas such as standards. You know, what does it take to become a flight instructor? You know, Paul, it's interesting. Under today's regulations, an individual can become a flight instructor and never once have flown by himself or herself in an airplane. I mean, the rules permit this. Mm-hmm. And it was recognized that that was one of many examples where there will need to be a rule change to tighten up the loopholes in the process, which allow, in many cases, unqualified instructors to wind up in the instructional role.
Okay, what about the notion that you can become an instrument instructor without ever having flown in actual instrument conditions? Or one of your recent pet peeves was the lower standards for sport pilot instructors.
Yeah, that was discussed at length as well. And that we cannot change the culture there. That has to be a regulatory change that would require specific experience in instrument conditions. The same thing about how can a pilot, a private pilot, be legal to fly at night and had received only 3 hours of night instruction minimally, and none of that would have been in either real or simulated instrument conditions. And I don't want to beat on that. That was the source of my contention with Doug Stewart, that unless there was a regulatory change, we really could not change the system. And I've changed my mind with this. I admit I was wrong. I think that that there is a great deal that we can do as an industry outside of regulatory change to improve the practical test standards, improve the methods used to achieve the training required to meet the standards. We can do this by reworking the Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge and the Airman's Flying Handbook, the Airplane Flying Handbook, and, as I said, the practical test standards themselves.
Okay, but we're still not going to get to the point where we're taking check rides at night or check rides in actual instrument conditions.
No. That's a good point. There's only so much that we can do, but we have to recognize that there are 90,000 flight instructors out there in the world. The number of flight instructors that are doing the job right, doing it correctly, and preparing students the way they should be prepared, we're estimating is someplace around 20,000-25,000. So, you know, there's a big number of individuals holding flight instructor certificates that are renewing those certificates every 2 years by attending a flight instructor refresher course, and that's it. And they could wind up flying in the right seat or the left seat of an airliner for 15 years, keep their certificate in make it valid by attending a flight instructor refresher course, and then go out and teach the world how to fly and have not been in the instructional role for 15 or 20 years. This is not correct. This is one of the things that needs to be changed.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about a specific reaction that one of your readers had to a bulletin you sent out regarding the way things turned out, specifically regarding the cost of learning to fly. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about the Pilot Training Reform Symposium that happened in Atlanta. in terms of a statement, Bob, that you made when you sent out a note to your subscribers explaining how your mind was changed. One of the things that you said you came away with was that pretty much all the people, the industry and regulatory people in the room, agreed that cost was not the major factor in the declining number of pilots, but rather the unrelenting fatal accident rate. And we got an email, and I was copying on it. And he also sent it to you from a William Wang, who said, with regard to your statement, I find that very curious. AOPA says this often in the public eye, but when confronted, they will admit that cost is indeed a factor. And he goes on to say that many of the people he talks to anecdotally say cost is a factor. And I have to note that the cost of learning to fly has escalated in recent years. Are you confident cost is not a pretty big issue?
I am confident in that statement. We concluded in the symposium that people are willing to pay the price for quality instruction. They're willing to step up to the plate and pay for the skills necessary to learn how to fly an airplane safely. That they are willing to do that. Now, cost is a factor, no question about it. We're talking about the decline, the spiraling decline of general aviation. There are lots of reasons. We can talk about cost. We can talk about insurance, avgas, a whole litany of different problems facing general aviation. But we wanted to get to the critical path. What is the overwhelming single worst problem adversely affecting general aviation? And that it was agreed that our constant, unrelenting, flatlined fatal accident rate that has not changed in the last 10 or 12 years. This is a major problem with nearly 300 fatal accidents a year. This is just, imagine, Paul, if Disney World had suffered 300 fatal accidents in the past 12 months. Disney World would be out of business today. Virtually any industry that is offering a service to the public that winds up with 300 of its customers dying each year, this is just untenable. And this is the problem that really needs to be fixed. And we can trace that problem back, in many cases, to faulty flight instruction. You know, if the student fails to learn, it's because the teacher failed to teach. This is something that I've been ragging on for the last 8 years. And I'm pleased to see that the industry as a whole has come around to recognize that this is general aviation's dirty little secret that has been swept under the carpet and kept in the basement for a lot of years by a lot of our big name organizations. And finally, we're recognizing that this is a problem and we need to fix it.
Well, Bob, we'll look forward to seeing how this turns out. I assume if all these findings were assigned a timeline with regulatory people in the room, that we might actually start to see some things happen from this in a reasonable period of time.
Well, Paul, that is the $64,000 question, and that's the question I left Doug Stewart with. I said, you know, we had a wonderful conference here. We accomplished a lot. The people that needed to hear the message were in the room. Now, the big question is, what's going to happen in the next 6, 24, and 36 months? That, and I think this has got Doug concerned. He like the rest of us, and I can't speak for him, but SAFE has set a very high mark. And now the question is, can we achieve it? My hope is that we can. I think SAFE is the organization to do it. They cannot do it alone. It has to be a collaborative effort between, the original equipment manufacturers, the vendors, the FAA, the regulators, the membership organizations. We all have to get together, drop, and this turf protecting, setting our own agenda, and all work together towards the common goal of improving flight safety. If we can do that, then we can make it safer.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your comments and thought starters. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find more info on Bob Miller's free monthly newsletter and other enterprises at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.